Hello, everybody. Welcome back to another podcast at calbanion.com, or you might be watching this at what? www.banyanhypnosismall.com, Meet the Pros program. If you're watching this at another location, such as Google or one of the other distribution networks, make sure to check back to calbanion.com or our Meet the Pros program on Banyan Hypnosis Mall. Let me tell you what happened. This is a totally unexpected program, which I expect will be a multi-part program. I got a call from Roy Hunter, who's with me today, saying he was in town, and we had a chance to get together last night for dinner, and then I got this idea. I thought, while I got him here, I would have him put him to work. So he's on vacation, and so this is a Saturday afternoon. We've snuck into our classroom at the Banyan Hypnosis Center here. And so we're not in our usual business attire. We're being very casual today. And if everything goes right technologically, we're going to do several parts to this. And I want to start off today by, you know, welcoming Roy here and give you a little bit of an introduction, because Roy is a very special person in the field of hypnosis. Roy Hunter is a very well-known in the profession author who's won many awards from various hypnosis organizations. He's not like me. I only work with one organization. He's been around in the profession for many years and seen organizations come and go. He's worked closely with Charles Tibbetts and carries on the work of Charles Tibbetts. He's an expert in hypnosis, hypnotherapy, and especially parts therapy. Most people in the field of hypnosis know him very well for his two books, The Art of Hypnosis and The Art of Hypnotherapy, which I recommend to all of our students because they were two very important books as I was developing as a hypnotist and hypnotherapist. And then, of course, there's his latest work, Hypnosis for Inner Conflict Resolution. And, of course, all these books and some of his other products and training materials are available on the Banyan Hypnosis Mall. So I decided just a few minutes ago to spring something on Roy. Right? As a lot of the people here know, I do these interviews, but they're all typed up. And I thought if I had you as kind of a warmer-upper, I'd ask you the same kind of questions that we do in our written interview. Is that okay with you?
Sure.
Okay. Good. So here we go. Tell everybody a little bit about your background that you had before you became a hypnotherapist or a hypnotist.
I spent a decade in the insurance industry in both sales and sales management, and learned a lot about the aspect of the mind where people want to buy a product or a service only because they need the benefits. And I've taken that same approach into my hypnotherapy practice.
Beautiful. Good. And Roy, as I'm getting started here, as we start rolling through these questions, I just really want to, you know, thank you for being so helpful to me. I know if I have a question, I can always call you, and I know you're like that with all the students you've worked with through the years. Roy's an individual who really comes from the heart and is really interested in the success of his students and of the profession, you know, as a whole.
Good. Absolutely.
Good. All right, so then question number two. What did you decide, why? Why did you decide to learn hypnosis? What was kind of the thing that started it for you?
That's actually a two-part answer. First of all, in 1978, I was a stressed-out sales manager for MetLife.
Uh-huh.
And my stress levels were so high that my blood pressure started climbing way up to the point where even though I was in the insurance industry, I could not qualify for life insurance at standard rates.
Mm-hmm.
I was referred to a hypnotherapist, and they were few and far between back in the late 70s.
Uh-huh.
She taught me self-hypnosis and imagery, and through the power of imagery and self-hypnosis to manage my stress without any suggestions being given for the blood pressure. Within a month, my blood pressure was down to normal.
Mm.
And that really made a believer out of me in the power of the mind. And then several years later, I learned about Charles Tibbetts and the school that he had and decided I wanted to learn this art for myself because it had changed my life.
Beautiful. Yeah, you're what I call a true believer. I mean, you didn't just take a course, but you went into the course knowing that this was worked, right?
True.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So tell us a little bit about your practice, your office. Tell us, I know you're in Washington State, you know, what you're that kind of stuff.
I'm south of Seattle, about 25 miles, in a small town called Milton, but it's all part of the metropolitan Seattle-Tacoma-Everett area, like you're not in Los Angeles, but you're part of the Los Angeles metropolitan area. So I am in the Seattle metropolitan area, but in Pierce County rather than King County, just a couple of miles east of Interstate 5, which is your main north-south thoroughfare on the West Coast.
And so you have, you both see clients and you have like a school there, is that right?
That's correct.
Okay, good. So tell me a little bit about the kind of training that you went through yourself personally to get into the profession.
I was privileged to train under the late Charles Tebbets. He trained thousands of people who came to his school in Edmonds, Washington from all over the world. And out of all of the thousands of students he trained, for some reason he asked me to continue his work prior to his passing.
For some reason. What do you think? Why do you think he chose you to do that?
Well, it may have partly to do with the fact that I taught his course for several years in Tacoma Community College prior to his passing. And unlike a lot of people who plagiarize, I gave Charles Tebbets credit, oftentimes to the point where I was criticized for giving him too much credit. But I would rather give more than enough credit than not enough, because as a published author, I know what it feels like when people plagiarize your work. And I always admired Charlie greatly for the fact that he was willing to give Milton Erickson and Gil Boyne and Dave Ellman and other people credit where credit was due, both in the classroom and in his written materials.
So you just took his course? Was that all there was to it?
I took his course, which was, at that time, a 9-month, 150-hour training program. And then approximately 4 years after I finished it, he asked me to teach it. And an opportunity opened up for me to teach it through the Continuing Education Department at Tacoma Community College. Tacoma is about 30 miles south of Seattle. Charlie was about 15 to 20 miles north of Seattle. So we were far enough apart that he did not feel I would be competitive with him. That gave me an opportunity to really get some experience teaching professional hypnosis under my belt prior to Charlie's passing.
And you were able to build on that relationship. I mean, you weren't just the face in a class and went through one class, but you were able to converse with him and get advice from him and that kind of thing, right?
Correct. When I would encounter problems in the classroom, I would call Charlie and either talk to him at length on the phone about it, or on occasions I would actually make the one-hour drive up to Edmonds to have a personal consultation with him regarding a student concern.
Wonderful. So out of that came, and you've certainly studied other people too. I mean, you know the work of all the other great people, but Charles Tebbets had the greatest effect on what you do. Is that right?
That is correct. One of the things that I really admired about Charlie is that his approach was based on, first of all, empowering the client, helping the client accept the concept that all hypnosis is really guided self-hypnosis, and then secondly, to fit the technique to the client rather than attempting to fit the client to your own pet technique. And I call that client-centered hypnosis.
Wonderful. And then you've developed that into a system that you use and you teach. So can you tell us a little bit about, you know, I know you do days and days of teaching, and then, you know, if you could just give us a thumbnail sketch of the overall system that you use and you teach that. And then, folks, and I'm going to keep him here as long as I can, and I'm going to try to get two, three, maybe even, you know, four parts out of this being part one, and we're going to get all kinds of stuff and have more time to go in more detail. And those are going to be in what's going to happen, we're going to record those, and then as we get them prepared, because there's editing and audio stuff that has to be done, and we will then release those in a timely fashion. So keep checking back to wherever you're watching this video. And then I'm going to try to talk Roy into coming to our center here, probably, and we'll post this wherever you're seeing this, or you can go to calbanion.com or banionhypnosismall.com, and we're going to post. But I'm going to try to get you to come here and do at least one or two trainings, you know, at our center, probably in either the middle or end of September. So I'm going to work on you on that.
Thank you. That would be an honor to come here and teach.
Okay, thank
you. I respect Cal Banyan's work very highly.
Thank you very much. Okay. So go ahead and give us that thumbnail kind of sketch of your approach. I know, like, you have, it's not just parts therapy. There's like this four-corner, four-sided approach. And that kind
of. Okay. First of all, my basic course, the first part is based on learning the basics of hypnosis. You have to learn to walk before you can dance or mm-hmm. run. So basically, before people learn to dance with a trance, they have to learn how to walk with a trance, mastering the basic techniques, learning a number of different inductions, as well as deepening suggestions and additional suggestions that help a client validate that he or she is in altered consciousness. Mm-hmm. Basic concepts of suggestion structure, both direct and indirect suggestion, mm-hmm. imagery, etc., self-hypnosis. And once they master the basics, which are covered in my book, mm-hmm. The Art of Hypnosis, then the student is ready to learn the more advanced techniques. Yeah. And in the advanced section, that's where I build my entire remaining art of hypnotherapy on the foundation of four hypnotherapy objectives, which I also call the four cornerstones of successful hypnotherapy. Suggestion and imagery, which in the 19th century was called prestige suggestion. But according to the late Charles Tibbetts, if a person has a strong enough motivating desire to change and a minimal amount of subconscious resistance, suggestion and imagery can help some of the people some of the time, as long as they also get involved in the emotional desire to change. But when suggestion and imagery is not enough, you need all four cornerstones of the foundation. The second is...
Before you go to the second.
Okay.
A lot of the people that are watching are familiar with Five Path. And
okay.
So I'm going to make some parallels and stuff like that.
Fair enough.
So one of the reasons why I respect the work, your work, quite a bit is because we have a... Yeah, I'm not going to bring just people that agree and do things similar as I do them. I think that we need to shine the light on all of what's going on in hypnosis. But, for example, in phase one of Five Path, we do the preparation, testing, and convincing. That's phase one. And so that's very similar there. And we're going to see that Roy Hunter's approach has some overlap with Five Path, which, you know, our viewers are going to be more familiar with just because they look at my stuff all the time. And you go into the insight therapies, age regression, and parts therapy,
yes.
in some overlapping ways to how we do a Five Path. So for you that are familiar with Five Path, and there's a lot of similarity between this first part you talked about and phase one. So then, go ahead and tell them about the second cornerstone.
The second cornerstone is to discover the cause, and Charles Tibbetts called it uncovering the cause. Whether you say discover or uncover, notice the absence of the word diagnose, because I do not diagnose physical or mental illnesses, and neither does anyone or should anyone unless they are licensed and trained to do so mm-hmm. in the state or country that they practice in. However, that being said, I do accept the concept taught by the late Charles Tibbetts that if you use the right hypnotic techniques, again, fitting the technique to the client rather than vice versa, that you can solicit the subconscious to reveal whatever that core cause is, whether you're using parts therapy, regression therapy, or some other similar technique, or whether you are mm-hmm. simply asking the subconscious to respond with finger response questions, which is called ideomotor responding. And basically the concept is until you get to the core cause, which Charlie called the original sensitizing event, and many people today call the initial sensitizing event, different terminology for the exact same thing. You are missing a very important step if you try to help a client release a problem without uncovering that core cause first.
It's like dominoes. You know, you're going to get all those dominoes. You got to find that first one and work there, and that's going to make it much easier to work with everything down the road, so to speak.
Indeed. And according to the late Tibbetts, once you did discover that core cause, you had to release the client from any emotional attachment that he or she has to that core cause. Mm-hmm. Without that release, the subconscious is fully capable of buying the problem back again. Mm-hmm. And that in itself is not sufficient because the subconscious has to believe that the change will be permanent, Otherwise, a person might backslide very easily. And I learned this my first year as a rookie hypnotherapist back in 83 when a gentleman saw me to quit smoking. He didn't quit with suggestion and imagery, and I used suggestion and imagery at the second session along with a regression back to the core cause. And he goes back to an initial sensitizing event in his teens where his father was having an argument with him and chewing him out after catching him smoking behind the barn with a couple of school friends. So at that point in his life, the argument got heated, during which time his father said, "You will not smoke as long as you live under my roof." And my client, as a teenager then, said, "How dare you tell me I can't smoke when you're standing there puffing away on your cigarette while you're chewing me out?" And the father said, "Do as I say, not as I do." So even though the core cause was discovered, and he was angry at the fact his father was being a hypocrite, and that core cause was a release, and he released his father from the apology. He understood what was going on and forgave himself for carrying that anger subconsciously all these years. He believed he would backslide, because he always had. Every time he'd quit smoking before, and he had paid money 10 different times to go through 10 different stop smoking programs, and he always backslid. So when he came back a week later for his final follow-up session, he said, "Well, I did fine for 2 days, and then I was parked at a stoplight looking at the guy in the Porsche next to me puffing away, and I imagined how good the cigarette would taste." Well, once again, since imagination is a language of the subconscious, and this gentleman believed that he would backslide, that's when I realized that fourth cornerstone is subconscious relearning. The person has to believe that the success will be permanent. And how does that happen? After you've uncovered that core cause and released it, you enhance subconscious belief with suggestion and imagery. So any hypnotherapy session must be concluded with suggestion and imagery. And that's something you and I were talking about right after lunch.
Yeah, we were talking as we were driving back, that, and I missed a turn and I took the long way to get home. But when we do these this kind of work, age regression, parts therapy, they're insight therapies. People discover something that they weren't consciously aware of, or even the subconscious mind might not have had a great deal of awareness about. And that forces the subconscious mind into a state of reorganization. And during that period of time, which is brief, they become hyper-suggestible, and when you give suggestions that are consistent with the insight, they can be long-lasting, even permanent. But that's getting a little bit more detail. Why don't you, we got a whole bunch of questions here, and I want to keep this down to 20, 30 minutes, but why don't you just rename each one of those cornerstones for everybody?
Suggestion and imagery. Right. Discovering the cause. Release. That's the third one. Subconscious relearning is a fourth. And then you go back to suggestion and imagery to enhance everything. So I guess you could say I have a five-path approach also, but it's a slightly different path. However, just like there's more than one way to get from Los Angeles to Seattle or San Francisco to New York, there's more than one way to help a client achieve an objective.
Right.
And I dare say you're accomplishing those cornerstones even though you might use different terminology for it.
Right, and we do a preparation testing convincing as number one, then we do age regression number two, and three we do forgiveness work of others, and four we do forgiveness of self, and these are all releasing those emotions. We just have a very laid out kind of way, and then we do parts therapy and five path just for a specific thing. Roy uses it for a much wider thing. But we use it for removal of secondary gain, which relates directly to inner conflict, which, you know, you'll have much more time to talk about in your class and stuff.
Indeed.
Yeah. In fact, we'll probably talk a little bit more in part two of part three. So keep checking back, okay? Now, in your practice, is there a particular population that you work with? Is it just everybody, or is there a favorite population you like to work with as far as...
As a hypnotherapist, I like to work with a general crosscut, but in the past few years, a significant percentage of my clients have been professional hypnotherapists. So I've had people come all the way across the country to see me for personal hypnotherapy, and occasionally when I've traveled to do workshops, I've even had the privilege and honor of doing hypnotherapy for hypnosis instructors. And that, to me, is an awesome responsibility and an awesome encouragement. And I don't take it lightly.
When I go to the NGH convention, and you're there every year, I know that Roy is busy night and day doing sessions on the hypnotherapists that go to the convention. So you're kind of the therapist.
In October of 06, I was invited to be the keynote presenter at the Association of Professional Hypnosis and Hypnotherapy in London. And I stayed a couple extra days and had my days booked solid with sessions.
I don't do that, by the way. And that's just because, when I go somewhere and I do what I go there to do, and then I don't do sessions. So don't ask me for sessions, because I have a rule against that. But you're a hard worker, and you'll do your workshops all day. You'll be signing autographs on your books in the afternoon, and then at night you do sessions. And I don't know how you do that, but when I
believe in this work with a passion. To me, it's more like a spiritual ministry.
Right. And I'm concurrent with that. So now we've got kind of the fundamentals of how Roy does this. Roy, I'm wondering if you could, I know this is really hard in a short period of time, but if you could tell everybody about maybe an interesting case.
Well, the first one that comes to mind is the latest case, because my client gave me permission to discuss it. She saw me for fear of flying, and she had heard that a lot of people with fear of flying could get over it through hypnosis. And as so frequently is the case, when there's a phobia or an anxiety, the initial sensitizing event has a direct relationship to the particular concern or fear or anxiety. Mm-hmm. In this case, what was unique about it is her perception of what she thought was the core cause was different than her subconscious perception. Because at a conscious level, she asked me to regress her back to the very first time she felt uncomfortable in a plane. And that was at a time when the plane took off, had some sort of engine problem, and there was an actual risk of the plane crashing, and it turned around and landed at the same airport that it took off at. And from then on, she was never comfortable getting on a plane. Mm-hmm. Charles Tebbets would call that the activating event, because all that did was turn the switch from a sensitivity that resulted years earlier, but not from childhood. A lot of people do inner child work on the presumption that the core cause always is during someone's childhood. And to coin the phrase from a movie, it ain't necessarily so.
That's right. So let me just say something to clarify some terms. And so you five-pathers out there, we just call it the symptom-producing event. It's the same thing. There's a pre-existing condition, and then something triggers it. Something significant happens in the symptomology, or distress comes up, whatever it is.
Different name for the same thing.
Exactly.
And again, I don't get into labels as much as actually doing it. For example, Charles Tebbets used a technique he called the feeling connection, because you regress somebody back with an emotional feeling. Today, that's called the affect bridge technique. Different terminology for the same thing. And I used the feelings that this lady has when she gets on a jet to take her back to the original time that she felt those feelings. And even though I expected something to happen out of childhood, where her subconscious took her was to a time when she was a professional working in a skyscraper about 50 floors up on the West Coast. And there was an earthquake, and the building was swaying back and forth. That was her initial sensitizing event. Mm-hmm. And she had never connected the experience of being in the earthquake, being fearful of the building swaying back and forth, with her fear of flying. But her subconscious connected the dots. Once that event was cleared, she felt very comfortable with the concept of flying, and I greatly appreciate that she gave me permission to share this case with my students.
Wonderful.
And I have asked her for written permission to actually include that in my third edition of The Art of Hypnotherapy, which I'm currently working on.
Beautiful. What is it that you found out that made that case interesting for you?
What I believe makes that case interesting is the fact that it demonstrates why it is so important to use a client-centered approach. Because if you facilitate regression or parts therapy with your own preconceived opinion, or even if the client goes in with a preconceived opinion, you may not get to the place where you need to. So before I facilitate a regression, I ask the client to set aside his or her preconceived opinions, as I did this woman. I said, set aside your own preconceived opinions about what you think the cause of your fear of flying is, mm-hmm. and allow your subconscious to go where you need to. Mm-hmm. And that's what happened. It went to a place that consciously she thought had nothing to do with the fear of flying, but that was indeed her core cause.
You know, we hear about poor hypnotherapy work being done and a therapist leading the client, but these preconceived ideas that the client has about the cause can lead the session too.
Indeed, and that's why I explain to the client the importance of setting aside preconceived opinions about the core cause.
Beautiful.
And I call that client-centered hypnosis.
Beautiful. And it's almost beyond client-centered per se, because what you do is you do client-centered. It's not just the client, but the client's subconscious mind.
Indeed.
I like to say we deal with the problem where the client perceives the problem to be when they're in hypnosis. Right? You see? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So are there... Let me see. I want to make sure I get all this stuff in here just right. Why do you think your clients select you instead of going to the guy next door and that kind of thing?
Well, years ago, it used to be because of selling the benefits mm-hmm. over the phone when they would call me, because a lot of people just go through the Yellow Pages and look for the cheapest person. However, people buy benefits, not price. And if you quote price too soon, then they'll move right on to the next person. So, in fact, I think we're going to do a little workshop on telephone techniques.
That's right. I'm going to hold you right here, and after this is done, we're going to do a whole maybe 20 minutes on just that topic.
Okay. Nowadays, I believe most of the people who choose me do so because they've been to my website, or they've been referred to me by somebody mm-hmm. else, or they know of my work because they are practicing hypnotherapists and are willing to fly hundreds of miles, or in some cases a couple thousand miles, to see me at my office.
That's right. Yeah, you know, the real success comes from success, and because you've developed a streak credibility. You know, the people who know you from their mother, father, sister, brother, cousin, another therapist
yes.
has had success, and when you do that kind of work, people will fly past 1,000 other hypnotherapists to get to you, right?
Indeed. Last year, a person with professional credentials flew all the way from the East Coast mm-hmm. to see me, and not only spent a day having a couple of personal sessions, but also asked for a full day of parts therapy mentoring.
Beautiful. Wonderful. Now, you guys that are watching, I want you to encourage... You're going to be teaching a course just about every year at the NGH convention, and you teach a course. But I know that this year you're teaching a two-day course.
I'm teaching a two-day post-conference on parts therapy at the NGH Summer Institute, which is held west of Boston. For those of you who have not been, I strongly recommend that you attend the NGH convention. It is the best hypnosis convention in the world. It's very well attended. And there is a tremendous selection of presentations, hour-long, two-hour-long workshops, three-hour workshops, both pre-conference and post-conference workshops.
That's right. And I'm going to be doing the Week of Power at the convention, too. So, you know, you can always find out information about that, calbanion.com, banyanhypnosismall.com, and, of course, our training website, which is hypnosiscenter.com. Tell me about other classes that you teach, maybe at your center, or what other kinds of classes do you teach?
Well, at home, I teach a 9-month course based on the teachings of the late Charles Tibbetts, and recently I have been encouraged to teach an accelerated version so that people can come from all parts of the world to attend it, and that is tentatively set up for the last part of June.
Mm-hmm. Good.
More information can be obtained on that when it becomes available, by either contacting me, and I understand you're going to be having some announcements about it.
Yeah,
so if you check Cal's website frequently, when it's available, there'll be an announcement there about it.
Yeah, that's right. We'll keep the information coming. Also, Roy Hunter writes for the Banyan Hypnosis E-Zine. So if you go to Banyan Hypnosis Mall, on the left side you'll see the Banyan Hypnosis e-zine link. Go there. You can read his articles that are new and some of his older articles. And then there's also a link to all of the other courses that he's got listed on the site and all the other products. By the way, I want you to talk a little bit about, you know, some of the products that we have of yours, your teaching products on the mall. I know you've got at least three books, and if you could just give them a rundown of each one of those real quick.
Well, The Art of Hypnosis is the first third of my course. The Art of Hypnotherapy is the second and third parts of my three-part course, mm-hmm. and Hypnosis for Inner Conflict Resolution from Crown House Publishing is an in-depth book on parts therapy, which I believe to be the most complex hypnotic technique there is. It's very important to follow the discipline properly in order to get lasting results on it. There are variations of parts therapy, but this is not a long enough segment for me to properly explain parts therapy. That being said, there will be some DVDs that will be available, a 3-DVD set of mine facilitating parts therapy at a workshop I did in Ireland in 1999. Mm-hmm. There also will be a DVD of the late Charles Tevis facilitating parts therapy with an epileptic, one of the best sessions that Charlie ever facilitated. And as far as parts therapy workshops, any of you around the world who are willing to sponsor a workshop, contact me directly and we can negotiate win-win details. Have voice, will travel.
And what are the best ways for our viewers to contact Roy is to go to the BanyanHypnosisMall.com, and then there's a contact us button, and just do that, and then we will forward the information to Roy. That way we're able to keep track of what kind of requests he's getting because of the work we're doing together, and that's why we handle it that way. Okay, I got just a few more questions,
okay.
And we'll wrap this up. What do you wish more people, I like asking this question, what do you wish more people knew about hypnosis?
I wish more people realized that imagination is a language of the subconscious, because I hear so many people give negative suggestions. I also do not believe in aversion suggestion because of the fact that imagination is a language of the subconscious. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. If you tell a smoker to fantasize tumor-laden tongues, cancerous lungs with cancer spreading, and that person backslides, what kind of risk have you just taken? As far as I'm concerned, even if you have a higher success rate using aversion suggestion with stop smoking programs, the risk, in my professional opinion, is unacceptable for the people who backslide. And this comes not only from a personal or professional opinion, but out of the fact that having been facilitating professional hypnosis for almost a quarter of a century, I have had more than one client see me who actually experienced an aversion approach a year or two earlier and started having health problems after backsliding on the aversion approach. So realize that what you say works as far as a suggestion because of what the client imagines and fantasizes. And when you combine imagination with belief and expectation, you can have either a wonderful combination for success or a potentially dynamite formula for something negative to happen if you're using aversion suggestion.
That's right. Good. I'm glad to hear that. I think that's not really thought about enough. And we want to really stick with more, to use your words, a benefits approach, which we'll talk more about later.
Yes, but I've seen a lot of aversion suggestions in script books that appear at every hypnosis conference I've been to, at display tables, etc. And it's incredible how many of these scripts have negative suggestions in them.
I'm
a stickler when it comes to what you say and how you say it.
That's right. Beautiful. Good. Now we've got a certain time restraints here.
Okay.
So now what I'd like you to do is just kind of wrap it up with what you'd like people to know about you or hypnosis and the work you do. Just kind of wrap it up for me, and then we can start recording the part two and part three and stuff like that.
My goal as a hypnotherapist is to help my clients attain their ideal empowerment. And as a hypnosis instructor, my goal is to teach other professionals to do likewise, with the concept that all hypnosis is really guided self-hypnosis. And I'm an artist or a guide. My job is to say the right words that help the client become more empowered.
Beautiful.
So we need to fit the technique to the client. We need to have the ultimate ideal empowerment of our client as the long-term goal for the sessions that we do.
Beautiful. Thank you for joining us in this part
Thank
one.
Thank you very much.
You folks here, I'm going to give you kind of a touch of what we're going to be doing, or not touch, a hint of what's coming up in part two and three. And I've got them all laid out here because I'm going to try to keep them here. We're going to be talking about an introduction to parts therapy. We're going to be talking about why and how to use convincers. And we're going to talk about some insider tip tricks and techniques for booking appointment. A lot of you are doing a lot to get that phone to ring. Roy is going to talk about what he does to get to turn those phone calls, those potential clients, into bookings. All right, that's it for now. Cal Banyan, the Bain Hypnosis Center, signing off. This recording is the property of Cal Banyan and Cal Banyan's Banyan Publishing, Incorporated. All rights reserved, for private use only, may not be duplicated without written permission.